So tell me about the birth parent searching. And do you have any concerns that seems a little bit, I don't know if I'd use the word ambivalent, but clearly not as
enthusiastic
as me.
Oh, yes.
It's been like that from day one.
Okay. So
he's a little bit along for the ride, you know, whatever it'll be. I remember going up to tell her that this couple that we had thought were her birth parents were not, that we had just gotten the DNA stuff. And my heart sank that they weren't, because I really liked the couple. But when I went up and I told her, her reaction was, I really don't care. You know, I really don't care if they're my I told you all along, if they're not my parents, I don't care. I'll care about the people when I know they're my parents. And I said, okay. And then we've talked about how she's going to care about them. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm very protective of her. I make a point of always saying to her, who's your mother? Who's your mother? You know, who loves you with all her heart and soul and would do anything and die for you? You, I know you, I know you. So she says that to me all the time. You, dad, dad, dad. She's very connected to her older brothers. They dote on her. I feel like if anything ever happened to my husband, I know that both of her brothers would step in a parent way, you know, and completely take care of her. So I know she feels that intense love from the four of us. You know, it's really beautiful, I think. And so she's not that interested on a certain level. I think she, in her heart, I would be really hard-pressed to think that she would ever develop the type of feeling for her biological family that she has for us. She's said to me, I think of them, if I found them, they'd be like my cousins. You know, people that you see every now and then that you have a connection to, but no, not the people that I'm going to, like, really be tight, 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 tight with.
So if those are her feelings, why is it important that she establish a connection at all, from your point of view?
Health reasons, that was one of the things that I thought, you know, to be able to just have a sort of a basis for going back to say, oh, maybe, you know, trying to, you know, have there been any health issues in your grandparents? Like how long have people lived in your lives? Is there anything that we should know about? I mean, I did get interesting DNA results from 23andMe that showed basically nothing was wrong. You know what I mean? Like she was a healthy girl. She does. She is really pretty healthy. She has a little bit of eczema, which is pretty common in some Chinese people, or in anybody really, but, or so I've been told. But other than that, nothing really that was anything out of the ordinary at all. So, just for curiosity's sake, you know, I feel like I was talking to a friend of mine who's, I'm trying to think, is she Korean or Chinese? Anyway, she's in my journalism class, Columbia, and, you know, I was telling her about the birth search, and she was like, I think every human being should know who their birth family is. Everybody. They just need that information. Everybody should have that information. So I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, I don't know if I quite go that far, because I don't know if it's healthy for people that come of situations that are not healthy environments, you know, healthy psychological environments, or, you know, if somebody, you know, whatever. So I don't necessarily think that's always the best thing that somebody knows. But, you know, by and large, I think that if there's a good, really good emotional support system there with the adoptive family, where the kid feels very, where the child feels really safe and loved, then I feel it would answer a question, and it's up to my daughter if she wants to pursue that, those people or not. I mean, maybe if there's a sibling in the family, maybe a sibling will be eager to establish a relationship with her, and then she'll know that she has a biological sibling, that she can have a connection. You know, being that China's halfway around the world, and being that probably most of the families in China aren't going to necessarily have the wherewithal to travel easily to get to the U.S., you know, I think we'd be the ones that would have to be making more of the real effort to get over there, to really meet the family, to do those things. And I don't, you know, and you don't know if the family's going to be receptive. I mean, you know, if the family's not receptive, the family's not receptive. If they, you know, it could be that if we find who her birth parents are, it could be that if they do have other children, they've never told the other children that they actually had another child, or they gave a child up for adoption. I don't want to screw around with that process. But I also, you know, wonder if, as a parent, if I gave a child up for adoption, I probably would always be wondering about that child and where they were, if they were okay, if they were healthy, who was raising them. And so on some level, I wanted those people to know that if they want that information, we're here. I mean, I know it's a slippery slope. I would close ranks immediately and protect my daughter in any way that I am a strong person. I mean, I'm a bright person. I would do whatever I had to do to protect her. But I'm not that worried about them, whoever they may be, her biological parents, if they're ever found, interfering to a significant degree in her life if she doesn't want it and if we don't want it or if they don't want it. So, you know, I think it's going to be a fine line, but I feel pretty safe about that.
It doesn't feel like a risk. And it
yeah,
sounds
I
like
think it would be, I would be feeling more uptight if they were US-based, if it was somebody that was US-based, you know. And I think a lot of the parents in the Chinese adoptive system, for whatever reason, those children were put into the system. I don't think they were necessarily people of great means. They may be now, but I don't think they were back then. And I think most people are just grateful to know that a child that they may have put into an adoptive system were placed in a family that was incredibly loving and could give their child a lot of opportunities. The only risk that I always feel is that, and this could be also a reason, I mean, I've thought about it from so many angles, you know, sometimes I think that, you know, it is much more of a risk for the birth parents to say, okay, let's meet, because if they do have biological kids, it might open up sort of not a great can of worms. I mean, it could open up a can of worms with the biological siblings if they see, well, oh my gosh, this family is able to come from the United States and she might have many more opportunities, and maybe why wasn't I put up for adoption? You know, they may have that type of attitude. So, you know, it's just, I really sort of feel it's like anything else in life, one day at a time. Do the best you can do with the information that you have and just keep an open heart. And try and protect yourselves and your child as much as possible.
I don't think people really understand, except the people who are doing this, the mechanics of how all this works. Can you kind of just explain how you're doing this?
So what I would start off by saying is we probably did not go about it in the smartest way initially. And that's because my daughter and her older brother, who speaks fluent Mandarin, flew to China this summer for a trip and embarked on their own search. And their search consisted of initially going to the orphanage to try to get as much information as they could. And, of course, the orphanage was not really 100% forthright with the information that they, in fact, had and knew. But they were, you know, lovely and, you know, sort of tried to be as gracious and welcoming as possible, but that didn't deter. They decided they wanted to start, you know, after they went to the orphanage for a couple of days and talked with people, they decided they wanted to start putting posters around town. And people, in, you know, said you should, you know, as they started to do that, they said, you really should go to the local television station and see, maybe they'll do an advertisement for you. And when they did go, the news director was really keen on doing a human interest story, and they were able to get a piece aired on their search, and then social media started sort of exploding, and they got one important nibble that way from a couple who seemed to have legitimate information about their biological daughter that had ended up in the orphanage system. And their information that they had gotten from the orphanage just recently over the last year, because for the past 12 years they've been trying to get information on their daughter, who had actually been confiscated from a local family that they had given their daughter to raise, sort of like in an open adoption type situation, because at the time that they had their second daughter, they were very impoverished, they were very young, mother was still only 19, and they couldn't care for their daughter, so they chose a couple locally in the village that was childless and gave their daughter to that couple so that they could keep an eye on their daughter, and the couple would have a child. And then corrupt local officials in the Hangdong city area got wind of the baby being placed with this couple and came in and confiscated the child and said to the adoptive couple, you have no right to this child, it's an illegal adoption. The biological parents tried to go get their daughter back, and they had no luck. The government the local officials were flatly refusing to return the baby, and she ended up in the orphanage system. And so they had, for the longest time, been trying to track whatever happened to her. And the part that had struck them when they heard about the story of searching for biological parents was that there said that her birth name by the orphanage had been Fu Li Hua, and that her birth, and that she was from Connecticut in the United States. And this couple had been told, and that she was born in March of 2002. And this couple knew that their daughter had been born March 10th, 2002. And they knew that they had just found out the year before from somebody inside the orphanage who gave them some information that their daughter had in fact gone to a couple in Connecticut in the United States. And so when they heard Connecticut, March of 2002, they thought, oh, this could be our daughter. And they had been, they told us that they had been told their daughter had been given one of two names. It was either Fu Li Hua or Fu Li Hui. So that's why when they had heard about the news report, they immediately contacted the news director. So the news director put them in touch, and we said, well, what day is your daughter's birthday? And they said March 10th, and said, well, birthday we were told is March 16th, but you know, but still, you know, it doesn't mean that we don't necessarily believe that there that this could be a match, because we don't believe some of the information we've already gotten from, we know some of the information we've gotten about various things from the orphanage is not in fact true, so we don't want to rule out the possibility that these might be her parents, so why don't we do a DNA test. And so they quickly took their hair samples, which is not the best way to do it. Website 23andMe does it through saliva. That's the fastest, least expensive way to do it. But we didn't know anything really about 23andMe or that process. All we knew is we were scrambling at the last minute because we didn't really think we were going to get that far. Somebody coming forward and within 24 hours saying, you think we might be your daughter, but you know, Soleil's parents. So they gave us, they sent the hair samples, their hair samples. They were actually in Guangdong province at that moment, because they will, they work outside of out of their out of Hunan during the week, I think, or maybe even for most of the month, but they come back periodically. But they managed to get the hair samples to the news director, and the news director FedExed them to us, the hair samples, and we sent in Soleil's DNA and their DNA to see if it was a match. So that was the way, the first search that we, you know, experienced that we had. And it turned out, you know, within a month we got the results and it was not a match. And we were very, very sad by that, because we really liked the couple. We had, we chatted with them at great length, sort of like in a Skype situation, and they were darling. They have two additional children now, another boy and girl. And they were very sad when they found out that it wasn't a match, because here we were searching, actively searching for our daughter's parents, and they're actively searching for their daughter. But what we, what the interesting thing about that whole story, and which is also, you know, very challenging on a lot of emotional levels for a lot of people, was that when I knew we were in the process and we were waiting for the DNA results, I actually reached out to two other couples that I had gone, that had been on, in China with me when they were adopting their daughter. And I traveled with about, there were about 10 other couples all total, but only two of the other couples in the group that I went to were from Connecticut. And so I thought, oh, let me just, you know, like, just, I mean, it was like such an, you know, I really did not think that either of those couples would ever have information that would lead me to believe that, in fact, maybe one of their daughters was this couple's biological daughter and not. But what this couple had said was, I knew that their daughter had been born on March 10th, and I knew that one of the other names that they had said, the orphanage had said their daughter's name was either Fu Li Hua, which was our daughter's name, or the other name was Fu Li Hui. So I reached out to both of these other Connecticut couples, just who I've been friendly with over the years, and I just wanted to fill them in on what was going on. And they had, one of the couples is on was on Facebook with me at the time, so she knew what was transpiring and was interested to hear all about this. Well, and spoke fluent Mandarin and how that was going, and it was so fascinating. And, you know, she saw the video that had been done, and because I posted it on Facebook. And so she was, when I called to talk to her just to fill her in, it was sort of like a very sort of, you know, lovely conversation. And then all of a sudden, it just like, you know, 20 minutes of talking to her about what was going on, because I informed them also, I informed her in that conversation that we all had not known something, and that was that there had been a huge corruption scandal in Hunan province 2 years later called Hunan Six. And it was a baby trafficking scandal where 45 officials from six different orphanages throughout Hunan were indicted basically in China on corruption charges, buying and selling infants. And at the heart of that scandal was our the orphanage in Hangdong, where our daughters were from, and the Hangdong Social Welfare Institute. And the orphanage director was facing time in jail and heavy fines, as was in the local town, the head of the civil affairs office there, who was facing 15 years in jail. And he ended up going on the lam and was never caught. But all these people in the town and in the orphanage were being charged with major corruption. And so I was sort of filling them in. Oh, my gosh, you know, like, just FYI, our daughters may not really be from the Hangdong area the way we'd all been told. And, you know, you can't really believe anything you've been told now. And so in the heart of this conversation, I said, oh, by the way, to my friend, to one of my friends, by the way, your daughter wasn't born on March 10th, was she? And she goes, well, yes, she was. I said, oh, wait a second. Her birth, when you got her from the orphanage, her name hadn't been Fu Li Hui, was it? And she said, well, yes, it was. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this isn't happening. And all of a sudden, she, like, there was silence on the other end. And I know she thought, oh, my goodness, what's happening here? And I feel badly because I really did do it. And just a curious, you know, I'm a journalist and I'm curious, you know, Jen, I'm just a curious person about everything that crosses my path in life. And so it wasn't like, I mean, it might have felt like to her I was setting her up in a way, and that was so completely not the case. It was completely me just sort of, you know, telling what was going on, trying to get information, trying to do it in a subtle way, really in my heart of hearts, before I even called her, in the back of my mind, I was thinking to myself, oh, please don't let any of this be, like, don't let them be have that information. Don't let these people, because I really wanted to be the person who was their daughter and or somebody that I had no way of contacting, because the only other people, you know, that I legitimately could ask about this whole situation were people that I had known had gotten their daughters from the same orphanage I had and who I knew and who had traveled at the same time. Otherwise, it was going to mean that I was going to have to do all this research for somebody else, and it wasn't worth it, you know. But this type of thing, I think when they were telling me about a Chinese couple saying, well, our daughter was March 10th, and this is the story of her confiscation, you know, and we tried to get her back, and then also this was her, this could have been her, we were told this was possibly one of the other birth names that had been given to her. I thought it was almost a moral imperative for me to check it out for them, to at least ask the two people that I knew if their daughter possibly had that birth name from the orphanage, and it's possibly that birthday. And I thought, uh-oh. So that's where that stood. And the other couple, this couple in China whose biological daughter we think is now with this couple from Connecticut that I traveled and got my daughter with, that couple in Connecticut has completely shut down. And the wife defriended me from Facebook, even though it wasn't an acrimonious type of situation. I think she got completely freaked out. She doesn't want to know anything about the birth parents. She was not interested in checking her daughter's DNA against this couple's DNA and really sort of closed ranks and sort of, you know, stuck her head in the sand. When I had encountered that from her, I wrote her a very, very carefully crafted email that people who have read the letter say, oh, this could be read in a court of law. Nobody would give you a hard time over it. You're just, I really approached it from a, not a friend perspective, but from a journalist's perspective, and said, you know, you really should make informed decisions. And I just want you to think of long-term, not short-term. I don't want you just, you know, not, I don't want you to be making a decision based on your immediate fear. You really need to get a bigger picture of potentially what you could face down the road if this couple does continue to search. And if your daughter, when she's 20, 25, without telling you, does a search of her own, what if this couple does put their DNA on 23andMe, like a lot of Chinese couples are being encouraged to do. What if their DNA is on the site and their daughter, without telling them, puts her DNA on it? Oh, my goodness, she's got a match. She found her birth parents. And she reaches out to them, and they say, well, guess what? You know, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, we reached out, and your parents rebuffed, who very clearly told them that we thought you were our daughter. So, you know, people make decisions without really thinking of, you know, they live in fear and, you know, instead of being smart. And I also kept thinking, gosh, you know, if I were just, you know, the way I lead my life, if somebody came with me with that type of information and I completely be shutting ranks and stuff, it would be very hard for me not to think about that on a daily basis. It would be very hard for me not to have, you know, a moral dilemma pervading my everyday life about if what I was doing was right and smart and, you know, the best course of action. So, you know, I know that when I wrote the letter, I also wanted her to be thinking that way. I wanted her to think of me. I wanted her to remember that I was telling her, don't be uninformed. You need to be informed about how you're going to move forward, because this could come back to really bite you in the wrong way. And, you know, I'm sorry this happened this way. It was never my intention. My intention is to find my daughter's birth parents. But, wow, sometimes the universe throws us a curveball. And the thing is to try to deal with it, you know, in whatever, you know, way that's going to benefit all parties and in a positive way. Now, I do understand her fear on a lot of levels, so I'm just going to table it at that point because these things are so complex. But the person that I'm the most concerned about is the daughter, is the girl, on all sides, all around. The couple in China was trying to get as much information as from us as we could give them, and we really did not give them any information at all. We just said that we do believe it's somebody I traveled to China with, but that they don't want to be in touch with the birth family at all, and that they've shut down. And the couple in China was really devastated. I mean, really, it was very, very hard for them to hear, and they were really pleading with us to give them information. And, you know, we said, listen, can we revisit this in 5 years? When she's 18, when she's an adult, when we think that she's an adult, because, you know, we might be more willing to assist you in giving you road marks, you know, or sort of like, you know, what are they called? Sort of things that maybe they could do to try and have a successful search, you know? So the things that I would do for a successful search now, that's what this leads me to, both for Chinese couples and for adoptive couples and or for adoptees, is I would definitely seek out people like Brian Tsai and Longlin out in Utah, who have a website called researchchina.org. I'm pretty sure, is that what it is, Jen? I think that's
yes.
The name of it. But, you know, don't ask me how I didn't come across them before this search, because when they came back and I somehow came across the website, and that's the way I found you too. In that regard alone, I feel like there's a road that's being paved brick by brick by people like Longlin and Brian Tsai for adoptive families around the world and in China, birth parents in China, to reconnect if they want to reconnect. The site 23andMe, the DNA site 23andMe, is really instrumental and pretty amazing. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the wave of the future. And they have so much information already cataloged, readily at their disposal, about the placement articles when babies were found. I mean, who knew such a thing existed? I never did, and I'm a journalist. You know, I was like, I didn't know that. I didn't know that when babies were found in China, there were these articles that were not articles, but like founding articles. What are they called? Founding notices or something? And, you know, it says like what the baby's name is, where they were placed or something. And then, just in certain information that helps people track things, right?
Yeah, that are placed in the local newspaper, you mean?
Right,
yes.
I didn't even know anything like that existed. And so what ends up happening also, they also had, in my particular case, they were very excited because they had the names of people that were involved in the placement at the orphanage. And so they could go back and ask those people what their experience, their specific experience was unto my daughter. So there was information to be had there. And there's a whole bunch of ways that they can track information, not just the ways in which they're doing for me, but there are a lot of tricks, I guess, that, you know, through the whole process in China, that like is unless you were working with somebody like Brian and Longlin, you wouldn't know that there was that much public official documentation that could actually be had. And that really rebuts you know, a lot of the information that people are given about their kid. Because, you know, I was told, oh, she's found at the entrance to the civil affairs office, at the entrance way, all the documentation says that our daughter was found at the entrance to the civil affairs office in Hangdong. When I found out about the corruption trial and I learned that the orphanage director at Soleil's orphanage was involved in the corruption, you know, lost his job and was facing jail. And then I also learned that the head of the civil affairs office, the very building where supposedly was found, was facing the most time out of the 45 people that were facing jail in the six orphanages that were singled out for being part of this corruption scandal. I thought, hang on, like the orphanage director and the guy who runs the building and the whole process there, you know, where supposedly was found. I mean, like, I'm supposed to believe now that this is how she was found. Well, the initial information that Longlin and Brian came up with refuted that completely and had a different type of scenario. So then it just took trying to research that scenario. And then we've had some, the first scenario that we had recently, about 2 months ago, we just got the results from 23andMe on the father of the man that we thought maybe was, this is a different couple than that I'm talking about, not the couple that contacted when they were in China, but this couple was somebody that Longman and Brian thought potentially there's a really good shot they could be, and it was based on a lot of official documentation in China. And we did a DNA on the father, and we just got the news earlier this week that, in fact, it was not a match. And so I didn't think it was a match. I just looking at them, I thought, these people don't look anything, because they send photos when they think it's a certain couple. And I could see sort of maybe the mother, but very beautiful. And the mother looked much harder, even though she was, you know, a 40-year-old version, maybe. she wasn't as soft and as delicate looking as she was. And I thought, I think she had really beautiful parents. You know, one would think that. So it didn't surprise me that they weren't the parents. But now Longlin just emailed me a lot more information that the research has come across as another possibility that they're really hanging their hat on. They're hoping that this could be. But this would be more difficult and more challenging situation to try and research, because what they think now is potentially that was found on the banks of a river that separates Gaotian Village, which is about 40 kilometers from Hangdong, and another village that's on the other side of the river. And apparently there's a bunch of information that Longlin was sort of describing in a phone message to me that leads them to believe the description of what this baby was wearing rivals what was being described when she was taken into the one-child policy system and she was being placed, I guess. But with this child, who Longlin thinks might be, this child was found in a basket on the banks of the river. Of the people in the village, it was like sort of, you know, they saw sort of in a nighttime, I think it was sort of nighttime the way it described to me, and they saw a man leave a basket there, and the villagers, you know, knew that it was a baby, but they didn't go over to it. And then it took an old man who was walking by who saw the baby and then sort of walked away, but then later came back and the baby was still there and picked the baby up and brought it with another man. And Longlin sent me the picture of the old man and the man, the cab driver who took him to give the baby to the officials. And so they think that that may be her. So they have asked us just in the last 24 hours send us a poster that we've done up over the summer with a picture of all the information about Soleil and how we're trying to look for her birth parents. And what they want to do is this weekend, since it's Chinese New Year, they want to blanket both sides of the river and the areas around there with posters informing everybody. Since it's Chinese New Year, a lot of people are coming back from other provinces where they work, and if there's going to be a good shot of people paying attention, it would be at this time of year. So that's where we stand now. It's been sort of this will be the third, you know, portion of our search right now, because the last two things were I don't want to say fruitless, but learning experiences, and did not turn out to be matches for our daughter.
So I have a couple of kind of logistical questions about this. Uh-huh. The first uh-huh. is, while we know of reports of Chinese birth parents who are searching themselves for children who were confiscated or foreign trafficked, kidnapped, I imagine that there are also people who are very reluctant to be drawn into this process. I mean, as the people you knew in Connecticut were reluctant to be drawn in,
yeah.
With fears that I can imagine what their fears are, you know, mm-hmm. if we find birth parents and we, you know, what does that mean? Are we in a permanent relationship with people who are across the world? Will it change our daughter's attachment to us? What if we find out that she was in fact not abandoned, but confiscated or trafficked? You know, what's our moral obligation? Then it just opens up all of these questions for the adoptive parents. For the birth parents, I just wonder, like, when you come knocking on the door, or Long Len comes knocking on the door, and she is Chinese, she's from Guangzhou, she's the adoptive mother of three Chinese daughters, she's married to an American, so she has feet in both cultures. She's sort of the ideal person to go knocking on this villager's door and saying, "Hi, I think that you may be the birth parents of a child who's been adopted in the United States. Can you give us some DNA?" What kind of reaction have you had from the potential birth parents? I know the first parents were very eager. How about the second parents? Were they like, "Sure, swap my cheek"? Are they like, "Who the heck are you?" You know?
Actually, when I found out that they weren't the birth parents, I was very relieved. Only because it was very funny when Longland's researcher went knocking to try to get the explained why they thought why we thought that perhaps they were the biological parents and wanted to do a DNA test. The mother, the woman who would have been the birth mother, was like really freaked out by it and wanted to only give her DNA at the police precinct. She said, "I'll give you my DNA, but you're going to have to go to the police precinct to do that." And so Longlin called me and said, you know, on a Saturday night at midnight, so it was like Sunday noon there in China, and she said the researcher's there and the mother is like not wanting to do it unless they go to the police precinct to do it. The husband may be willing to do it. He's seeming more agreeable to giving to see if it is a match. But the mother is, you know, is wanting to go to the police precinct. She goes, "I think that's sort of crazy. What do you think?" And I said, "Yeah, no, Longlin, forget it. If the mother's getting uptight, there's no reason. I don't know why is she getting uptight? Because she thinks she's going to get in trouble or something? This isn't about that. This is about, you know, people that are, you know, enthusiastic, wanting to have their daughter reconnect with whoever those biological parents are. We're all taking it one day at a time, you know. And, you know, it may not be that it's a great situation, you know, if we are able to find who the birth parents are. But, you know, I think I said this to you when you were interviewing me earlier, you know, we're a very tight-knit family here. I feel incredibly supported in our family, you know, with her two older brothers. And we always talk about the fact that, you know, okay, who are your parents? And she's like, "You and Daddy." I'm like, "Right. And who are the people over in China?" And we started calling them the sperm donor and the egg donor. So instead of, like, you know, really having her have a deep, deep connection to these people, we want her just to think of them, you know. And she says, and then I say, "Well, how would you think of them down the road?" She says, "Well, like cousins." And I was like, "Yeah, they're like cousins, exactly. You know, we're not going to spend too much dwelling on it, but it's nice to know that they're there. It's nice to know that you can have a good relationship. You can stay as close or as far as you want. You can be in touch. You can write letters. You maybe have a phone call, but, you know, everything can go as quickly a pace or as slow a pace as any one human being wants something to go." So she's in the driver's seat. And, you know, even when I said to her, "Oh, this other couple, they're not, you know, your parents." And she said, "I didn't think so, Mom. I didn't think they were." And I said, "Well, how are you feeling?" I sort of said to Longlin, "Well, I guess we're back to square one." And she said, "Yeah, I guess we're back to square one." And I said, "Do you want to continue on?" She said, "Yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah, sure. It's not, you know, yeah, sure." You know, I mean, like, okay. So, you know, from our perspective, I think that we all as a unit have a, her older brothers, my husband and I have a, and have a pretty good, you know, take on why we're searching, why she's searching. And we certainly don't want to force anybody. And it may be that we don't get an answer, that even if the person walking by sees a notice and says, oh my gosh, that's around the time that I event, you know, I dropped my little girl right there. Should I reach out? Shouldn't I reach out? Chances are there may be people who think don't want to open that can of worms. You know, that a Chinese man or woman say, I don't want to open that can of worms. You know, there's no point. You know, mm-hmm. But it may be they may say yeah, and then you know I'm into the people that say yeah. I'm into the possibility. I'm into the hope. You know what I mean? I'm into life is miraculous, and you know there are surprises to celebrate. You know, so I want to think that there's potential for birth mother or birth father to want to reconnect. And I'm going to hold out that hope, and she's the world going to hold out that hope. And if it happens, great. If it doesn't, it does not define her at all. You know, she's very, I think she's, the older she gets, the more aware she becomes of how complicated the whole process in China was.
What would you do if you found them and they wanted far more contact than you or she wants?
Well, I think I don't know how that would sort of manifest in terms of like far more contact. What would that mean? They're on the other side of the world, and I would think for most Chinese couples and or their potential other offspring, it's not going to be that easy to come to the United States. They'd probably be counting on us to try to get over there to reconnect or to say hello or whatever. Does it mean a lot of maybe some Skyping or WeChatting or emailing? Could mean that. And once again, just like every human being in those dynamics, you can control that type of interaction. You can control how much you want to respond to a phone call or an email. You can, on social media, you can block people if you want to block people. You know, so I, you know, it's just the way humans navigate the social, their social interactions, whatever they are. So it's going to be you, when you get to know someone, you get to know someone on who they are, step by step, hour by hour, minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, month by month, you know, and we would take it from there. I mean, it, you know, it would be interesting. I would love to know if she has any siblings, you know, and certainly if she had, you know, one or two siblings at the very least. I would love her to have an interaction with them, you know, biological siblings. But, you know, who knows? This is all, you know, this is all conjecture, and who knows? Only time knows, you know, only the future knows what's going to transpire. So, but I don't, everybody handles this so differently. You and I have talked about this, you know, and I just think I'm one of those people that really tries to seek joy, and I'm a journalist, but I try not to be afraid by things. I am afraid by things, just like other people, but I try not to be. I always want to try to figure out, navigate the waters to a place of goodness. You know, I'm always working that angle. You know, I want to bring joy to people's lives, not misery. That's just why when the woman, you know, in China was saying, well, I want to go to the police station and give my DNA. Like, I'm worried. And I was like, no, long list. Forget it. Tell her, don't even worry about it. We don't need your DNA. Don't worry about it. You know, no, we're not out here to upset anyone. That's not what this is about.